everyone. I'm Alex West.
And I'm Andrea Subisati, and we're from the Faculty of Horror podcast.
And you're listening to the Zombie Girls podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Zombie Girls podcast. I'm your host, Rachel, and joining me today to get our Women in Horror Month on are Sarah.
Hi.
Jody.
Hello.
And Ariel.
Hey.
Matilda cannot join us because she's busy off in the City of Sin dropping quarters and or pennies and slot machines and dollars and G-strings. So we are on our own, ladies. She literally is taking someone to the, like, ironically, to the Magic Mike show.
That's amazing.
That is seriously like the ninth ring of hell to me. I can't even imagine being like, yeah. Rub that banana hammock in my face.
Oh, you know, she's there with, you know, a fistful of singles and, you know, her phone number written on each one.
I would pay to see that.
I'm just trying to imagine Matilda doing that. I can't see it.
She's going to be the one that the bouncers have to pull off stage.
Right. How have you ladies been?
Good.
How's your Women in Horror Month? Are you feeling, like, vagotastic?
Oh, yeah. Feministy. Very horror. Yeah.
How about you, Ariel? How are things in the great Northwest?
Yeah. For a little while longer, anyways. I'll be here.
Promises.
Yeah, I know. No, I actually have a plane ticket, so that's good thing, right?
What?
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Any crazy shenanigans with your neighbors?
Oh, no. No, nothing except that, I don't know if I told you about this the last time I was talking about them, but there are these two young women and this one guy who they don't seem to know each other, but I often take walks around, like, the complex at night with the dog, and...
Would you say that you're a girl who walks home at night?
Anyways, and... I always see one of them or all three of them, like, leaving different apartments with armfuls of random shit, wearing no shoes, and then walking across the parking lot to another apartment. And it happens all the time. And I can't figure out what the fuck they're up to. It's driving me crazy because I want to know.
What it sounds like to me is, like, trading stuff for drugs.
Yeah, I guess that could be it.
I immediately went Sister Wives. I think Sarah might be right now.
I think your answer is more interesting, though, Rachel.
How about you, Jody? How are you doing over in the motherland?
Yeah, not bad. Yeah, I was just telling you before we started recording that I've been DIYing myself at home, so that's been pretty stressful. Looking forward to having a living room set up so I can actually watch a movie on a sofa instead of, like, a office chair. Oh, that'll be really nice. And hopefully this is the last leg. I'm hoping by this time next weekend I'll be set up.
Oh, that'll be awesome.
Yeah. I'll send you guys some pictures.
With all your DIYing, like, you're, like, tearing down walls and finding fireplaces. Like, like, I'm waiting for you to find something really scary or amazing behind the walls.
I was really hoping there'd be, like, treasure or something, but nothing like that.
What would you do if you found, like, a skeleton? Would you want to move out, or would you just be like, roommate?
I'd ring you guys. Take a bunch of pictures and hang it up in my house somewhere. I don't know, because I was thinking I had some pipes, like, hidden under my floorboards. So I had my plumber come out and, like, take up the floorboards, and I was thinking, oh, what if he finds, like, a suitcase for, like, cash or something? But like, in the last, like, year in the UK, I had, like, brand new notes printed for, and I'm like, I bet they're all fucking old, out of date notes now, and the bank won't take them. Like, even if I was lucky enough to find a big stash of cash,
they wouldn't take old notes.
I think there's after a certain point they don't take them anymore. Yeah,
well, that's some bullshit.
Yeah, probably for that reason.
You better hope it's doubloons.
Yeah, right. but yeah, no such luck, unfortunately.
All right, so obviously this month is a very special month to the cast of the Zombie Girls because it is Women in Horror Month. Like, I don't even know, what is it, like, the 8th annual or something?
Something like that.
7th annual? I mean, this has been going strong, which is so exciting. I mean, it's just one of those things that it's fun to kind of take a moment and just recognize the women who are contributing to our favorite genre, but also because it's like where everybody gets really vocal, and I feel like I learn about so many more amazing women doing cool things this time of month, and like other podcasts and websites, and just like that. Remember when we started Zombie Girls, it felt like we were on an island of like the only women who are like in fandom talking about horror. I mean, obviously that wasn't the case, but it was like fairly isolated, and now I feel like a community has been built because of this Women in Horror Month. So I love this. I mean, do you guys, is this like a big deal in your lives, or do you guys kind of like whatever?
No, I love it, and every time I always discover like new movies that I've never heard of or I haven't seen, and that's always exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same. Nobody else seems to know that it's a thing, though. I was telling people at work the other day, "Oh, you guys, it's Women in Horror Month," and they were like, "Did you just make that up?" I'm like, no, it's a real,
yeah,
it's
I've
a
had
real
that experience
thing,
too.
You're like, "Yes, TM, give me all your money."
Yeah, right. And everyone goes, "Oh, why is there no International Men's Horror Month?" Yeah, okay. Right.
Oh my god.
But one of the awesome cinemas here in Bristol is doing a Women in Horror Month evening of short films made by women later this month. I was hoping I'd get to it before we recorded, but we. Recording a bit early, but I'll definitely feedback to you guys after that, because last year it was really, really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So cool.
Yeah
awesome. Yeah, so I mean, it's kind of like, you know, Zombie Girls Christmas, so we definitely wanted to do something special. We talked about, you know, we've done a few things in the past, and this month we've been, if you've been on the Facebook, you've seen that every day we're offering recommendations of movies that are directed and written by women, so that like some of them are the obvious ones that maybe you haven't gotten around to seeing, and then some of them are a little deeper cuts, you know, as the month goes on they get deeper and deeper. But to put them on your radar, I mean, like some of these things I think you're gonna be really excited to find, also because the movie themselves are amazing. Sometimes it's just exciting to meet new filmmakers so that you can like put them on your radar and look forward to their future projects and get excited about that. So I highly recommend checking out our Facebook page.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun doing it too.
Yeah, it's been great seeing what you guys have been picking.
Such a Facebook Nazi. I'm just like, don't forget to put your picks in the thing. Did you set them up to go ahead of time? So I'm glad you guys are having fun with it. And then we decided for this episode, since we're only getting one that's like actually recorded and going out in February, although we've been very good about getting them out, now that Jody's helping
out. Yeah, Jody, you've been awesome.
Oh, amazing. Thanks. That's been really fun.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. That is not how you get me to stop sending them to you if you want.
No, that's fine. Although so far I've only done ones that I've not been in, so maybe that's why it's fun. Maybe if I start doing other ones, it won't be as fun anymore. But...
Oh, yeah. Listening to your own voice is...
Yeah, I'll be like cutting myself out.
I mean, that's what I do.
Yeah.
Like, if people think I talk a lot on the podcast, wait till you hear, you should hear the uncut version.
What's really funny is when you go, oh, let's just have a break for 5 minutes, and then you and Matilda are talking about, like, pastries or jazzercise.
Right. Or something equally metal.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, anyway, we decided for this episode we would highlight a woman filmmaker. It's someone that is kind of made waves in the last few years, but I don't know if any of us had actually seen these movies. This was a first watch for me. I'm gonna
guess.
Yeah,
it was for me too.
Yeah, I'd seen A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, but not the other one.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah. So we're gonna be spotlighting. We're going to be spotlighting the two feature films of Anna Lily Amurpour. Anna Lily Amurpour. Amurpour. Anna Lily Amurpour. We're going to be watching A Woman Walks Home Alone at Night. We're going to be watching A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night and The Bad Batch. But before we get into those, as usual, we like to do our little, like, what you've been watching. So let's start with Ariel, with what she's been watching.
Okay.
And I want to say, I see that there is not a movie title here that I was promised that there would be.
I know, I was hoping you might not.
And in its place, there is an unforgivable selection. I literally had a moment of anger when I saw your what you've been watching. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Ariel, proceed.
Oh my god.
Shame.
I know. I fully had intended to watch it, but I was talking to a friend about it, and then she went out and bought a copy for us to watch, and I just never got over there to watch it with her. Anyways, I'm sorry.
Of which we speak. What is the it? Say it.
I don't remember what it's called.
It's called Wonder Woman.
Oh, that's the one you were talking about?
Are you talking about what we do in the shadows?
Yes. I thought that's what you were talking about.
You watched this thing that we're going to get to. Neither of those? Like, you are a lost cause, Messman Rucker. You are a lost ass cause. Just tell me what you've been watching. I can't talk about this anymore. It's just too upsetting.
Okay, so the first one I picked was Lights Out.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've seen Lights Out. Has anybody else seen Lights Out?
I think I have.
I saw the short.
Okay.
Yeah, so had I, and I enjoyed the short. And then, I remember somebody told me they liked it. I think maybe it was my niece. So I watched it, and I actually did like a lot of it. I didn't like the ending at all, but I thought it was like a enjoyable, fun, quick movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I thought the ending was a little bit funky. Does anybody care if I give it away?
I don't remember how it
is. No.
Is this the one with the little boy and he's living with his sister because his mother has
he lives with his mom who it has like severe depression.
Yeah.
And he keeps talking about this like woman, I think her name's Diana.
Right.
And she shows up like when the lights are out and her.
Okay.
Yeah, and then his older sister comes in because he can't sleep at night and he's like falling asleep at school and CPS is being called in.
Yeah,
so then they have to sort of figure out how to defeat this shadow monster woman kind of thing who seems to be attached to their very depressed mother and keeps killing her husbands. Yeah, so I thought the movie for the most part was, you know, really fun. It wasn't like a perfect movie, but is one of those like kind of popcorn flicks. I thought it was enjoyable. The only thing I didn't like about the ending though was that basically they figure out that the ghost woman monster is connected to the mother, and without her she doesn't exist. Like without her controlling the mother's psyche, she doesn't exist, and she takes over control the more depressed the mom gets. She can take over like kind of more of her mind. And so at the end, the mom ends up shooting herself in the head and killing herself in order to kill the monster and save her kids. Which, I mean, that's not, you know, people sacrifice themselves in horror movies. You know, it's not infrequent. But I thought because so much of the film was dealing with depression and mental illness, that having her kill herself to sort of like relieve the depressive monster and kind of set her kids free was maybe not the best message to send people.
Right.
But I don't know. Yeah. Maybe I'm reading too much into that.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a long time since I saw it, and I don't really remember exactly how I felt about it. I know that I wanted to actually do this at some point on the show and pair it with something like Babadook or something.
Yeah. It would fit well.
Or, yeah. So I remember liking it and feeling conflicted. I think I was conflicted about the ending, but I do think, I don't know. I feel like it's been so long. I can't really say anything about
it. Yeah, no, that's cool.
I do think that it's like, it's not a great message, but I think it's also kind of shows the complexity of like the thinking that goes into people who commit suicide, where they think they are sparing other people sometimes, or they are thinking that like, if you really care about me, you won't want me to suffer, and this is actually the less selfish thing to do. And so there's an interesting conversation to be had about that. I don't know that that's what the movie specifically communicated, but I thought it was an interesting, it made me have like sort of an interesting thought process. But it's been so long since I saw it, like right when it first came out, that I can't remember how well it was actually executed. So I'm gonna take your word for it. I'm gonna give you the benefit of the judgment on that. So that's directed by the guy that did Annabelle Creation, which was a movie you really liked.
Yeah, I did. I liked Annabelle Creation a bit better though than this. I mean, like I said, I did enjoy the movie. It does have its, you know, fun parts and It definitely keeps you entertained, and it's only, I think, like 80 minutes or something, so it's a quick one, too. Okay, and then the other thing I watched was, I haven't watched all of it yet, but I started watching the Miss TV show one night when I couldn't sleep, and I'm only, like, I think 5 episodes into it. The Mist movie, I really loved. I thought that was a great, fun movie. And this TV show feels a lot more like a made-for-TV miniseries than like a prestige television show or something. The acting isn't great, and like the character development isn't great. I would say there are a few people that are pretty wonderful in it. Like, oh, shit. What's that woman's name?
Frances Conroy.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's really cool in it. Her character is really great. And there's like a priest guy that's pretty good too. But it sort of just has like a couple different factions of people that are at one group is at like the mall and another group is at the church after the Mist sort of starts attacking them. And the thing that's a little bit strange is just that you don't get to know all of the characters that well right away. It focuses like on this one family and this young girl who goes to a party and ends up being raped or sexually assaulted after being drugged or something, and mm-hmm. By another classmate. And you don't know, she doesn't remember all of it happening or who did it. Somebody else saw it happening. So there's sort of a weird thing because she's trapped in the mall with the guy that probably assaulted her. So there's some interesting things going on. I just don't know that they're doing like a super great job at it. And the monster part of The Mist is like completely different than the movie, where it seems to be more about like, once you get into The Mist, it like fucks with your head and shows you sort of the things that you're scared of, which is a different way of doing it. But I don't know. I'll let you know if I end up finishing it. It's not like, it's not one of those things where I'm dying to go back to watch the more episodes, you know, like I can't wait to watch more.
So. It's boring, actually. I got through about 5 episodes.
Yeah, that's where I got through.
Well, I got to where the little girl, the daughter who was sexually assaulted, the little girl are in the bookstore, uh-huh. and the little girl ends up dying. And right. But it's just like, I don't care. I don't care about any of them. The only interesting character is Frances Conroy.
Yep. Yeah, see, that's, I think, the major failing of it, is that you don't get to know the characters well enough. The ones that you do, they don't make you emotionally invested in them. Yeah. They're just not that, they're not interesting enough for you to care about, I think.
Yeah, because, I mean,
problem with it.
Because, like, you know, there's something that, like, happened in high school with the mom and
right
and stuff, and it's, but it's just like, okay, fine, she, you know, and it's like, I haven't even gotten there yet, and I'm willing to bet, like, mom was probably like gang raped by the football team.
Yeah,
and
they telegraphed that to you within like the first half hour of the thing.
Yeah, I mean it's pretty much like there.
Yeah.
Without you even having to like guess at it.
Yep. But they're kind of making it seem like you shouldn't know it yet. Like they're going to show you later.
Yeah.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. It feels like they don't think the audience is smart as maybe they are or something.
Yeah.
Anyways, and then I got excited when I saw that Cloverfield, the new Cloverfield movie, had been put on Netflix. So I went ahead and watched that, too. This, I didn't see it on any of you guys' lists, so I'm assuming none of you have watched it yet.
Not yet.
No.
Damn. I was hoping to see what you guys had thought about it. I thought there were some cool parts of it. A couple of the characters I liked, but it definitely, I don't think, holds a candle to the first film or Cloverfield Lane, which I absolutely adore.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a little bit disappointing. And I think the major disappointment is that I was kind of hoping to see more of like the connective threads to understand more of like what the universe is and kind of what it means. And I don't really think we got a lot of that.
Hmm. That's so disappointing.
Yeah, but well, I'll be curious to see what you guys think when you get around to watching it.
Yeah, because this one was the one that was kind of billed as the one that gives you answers about the monster. And mm-hmm. I've heard, like, basically that Netflix busted their wad way too soon with this one.
Hmm.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I just, it didn't give me what I was, maybe I went in with too many expectations and that was a problem. I think maybe if you go into this not expecting a whole lot and just sort of like a fun space movie, that you might enjoy it a lot more than I did.
Okay. That's good. It's good to recalibrate the expectations.
You know?
Because when the commercial was in the Super Bowl that it was like hitting Netflix that day, Randy was like so excited.
Yeah, so was I. Exactly.
Yeah. So let me just quickly go back to the Miss TV series, which is the one that made me angry was on your list. It was actually not Cloverfield Paradox, because that show, I've only seen the first two episodes,
okay,
but I can't just let it go by with you guys saying it's boring. It's it is aggressively bad.
Yeah.
Was so angry when I watched it. I watched the first episode and I was like, fuck this. And then I had to watch another episode for the Splattercast and I was like, fuck this and fuck you for making me watch this. It is so aggressively bad. Like, it thinks it trades in like sexual assault and thinks that it's gonna give you this big twisty twist. Can I spoil something for you, or do you think
go ahead, because like I said, I'm not enjoying it.
Who her actual sexual assaulter is?
It's the best friend.
It's the queer best friend. You know,
I was worried about that just because of the way they had him looking at her. Sneaky
non-heterosexual is actually the one that sexually assaulted her, and the good jock was actually framed, you know, for sexually assaulting a girl at a teen, and so she's falsely accusing of this like this young man with a bright future. I was like,
white football player,
you the mist, you suck. Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you with your fake ass moralism around also the person who has a drug habit. Like, if somebody is going in a fucking withdrawal and you're in the end of the world apocalypse, you withhold opiate? Fuck you.
I know. Fuck that shit. I didn't want to go into that, but fuck it. Yeah, that part made me upset.
So, how dare you not watch Wonder Woman? I hate The Mist. I hate The Mist more than anything I've seen in a really long time. Just so you know.
Yeah. That I didn't realize. I mean, I was worried that they might try to pull something like that, but it kind of, they kept putting it off. So I thought maybe they weren't actually going to go that way. That's really messed up and pathetic and sad. The people are still pulling plot lines like that is ridiculous.
Right. Well, I mean, I think they think they're being subversive when it actually...
How is like, that fucking subversive?
It's one of those
That's
things
bullshit.
Where people think they're being subversive, but, like, actually they're just, like, maintaining the status quo and undermining, like, the current...
Yeah, exactly.
...power structure in society. Yeah, like, so fuck that show. I mean, continue watching it if you're enjoying it.
No,
like,
no, that's
own,
what I'm saying. But... like, other than Frances Conroy and maybe the priest.
What is she doing in that show? She's so
I have
amazing.
No idea.
She's too good for it.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, so it's been canceled, so.
Oh,
ah!
God.
See, that's there is good. Some justice in the world.
Not only has it been canceled, but Spike is now the Paramount Network.
Oh, shit.
Spike has been canceled.
I mean, crazy. I feel like that's the appropriate response to that show. Like, burn that fucking place down. All right, Jody, what have you been watching?
Oh, not The Mist, that's for sure.
Good for you.
I was kind of tempted because I really like the movie.
Yeah,
but yeah, no. Like, based on what I've heard, I'll certainly not be watching that anymore. My horror watching's been really thin on the ground this last month or 6 weeks or so. So I was catching up on all the Saw movies, hoping to catch because I was hoping to catch Jigsaw, because I saw the first three in cinemas and didn't really like them, so I didn't really watch the rest of them. But then I'd heard that that Jigsaw was actually quite good, so I've been trying to catch up on them. So I got up to Saw 7. I haven't watched Jigsaw yet, and I was losing track of, oh, it was this guy working with Jigsaw the whole time. No, wait, it was actually her. No, wait, that was just a decoy for this other thing. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to give up on what I think is happening and just watch it for the gore. And the gore is actually pretty spectacular in Saw 7. If you can shut off from the storyline such as it is, it's actually pretty fun just for gory splatter. So if you haven't seen that far, I mean, they are not very good. And people, like, I talk to people about these movies and they go, oh, well, I like the first one. But and I go, no, the first one is terrible. it's no good. The second one is better, but it's still not very good. And then it gets silly. And when it gets silly, it gets good again because it's just fucking stupid. And like really imaginative, gory kills. And that's actually what I find fun about it now, instead of, because I think people were getting a bit upset. Oh, it's just really gory. And I go, yeah, that's the trick. That's fun. Yeah. So if you'd fallen off the Saw franchise, I recommend watching it for that fun, at least. The only thing I've seen in the cinema recently is Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Mm-hmm. Have you guys seen that?
No.
Not yet.
It's really good, and it's just an interesting, and it's not horror at all, but you know, it's got
it's kind of real life horror.
Well, yeah, exactly, it's got horrific subject matter, and it's just really interesting. It's an interesting kind of study on like anger and hatred, and good performances, and because it's like Oscar season, I feel like the cinemas are saturated with, you know, good in quote marks movies, but this is actually really good, so I'd recommend watching it. And on a Splattercast recommendation, I've been watching.
I saw this. Yeah, I was like, whoa, somebody's working their way through the backlog.
Yeah. Well, because I don't know what they've done with their feed, but they don't have all of their shows in the backlog anymore. So it's only the most recent, like 10 or 20 or so.
Yeah, so, right, but now they're for anybody who listens to Splattercast, they're in the middle of they're doing like an overhaul on the website.
Right.
So, oh, that's what's going on. Okay. Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. So I was listening to your Oliver Reed shows and some of them actually sound pretty good, and I watched two of them, and I actually really like them, Paranoiac and Curse of the Werewolf.
Mm-hmm.
And these are both Hammer movies that I hadn't heard of before. I think Ariel, have you seen these? Because I felt like you maybe like them.
Yeah, I haven't seen them in a long time, but right, I own them on DVD even.
Okay. Yeah they were just like cool old cheesy sort of period horror movies, and yeah, I thought they were really fun. Paranoiacs in black and white, and that had a really neat kind of imposter kind of, is it their long lost brother, is it not, you know, what's going on. And Curse of the Werewolf had just this cool like gross transformation where he's looking at his mannequin hands and it fades into hairy hands, and it's just really cool. So if you're in the mood for kind of like old, like non-Dracula Hammer movies, I recommend checking these out.
Yeah, there are a lot of old Hammer movies that are like that, and they're kind of more thriller ones that people really haven't heard of or watched very much. But if you get a chance to, they're always really fun. I mean, even if they're not like fabulous movies, they're always a blast to watch.
Yeah.
Seconding on the, especially on the Paranoiac. I loved that one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good.
Oliver Reed is, when he's like drowning that woman in the pond, he's so scary. And also kind of sexy. It's troubling.
Oh, he's very problematic.
Extremely.
No, but I want to be problematic in my pants. It's a problem. Oh, it is.
It is.
How about you, Sarah? What have you been watching?
I haven't really been watching much. About the only thing I have seen that's horror related lately is Dawn of the Dead Bloodlines.
I haven't even heard of this.
It's apparently like the latest sanctioned Romero film. It's bad. It's basically, long story short, he's a zombie and he's like, he's basically like the bub, but he's just this creepy gross stalker who wants to bang like a 21 year old intern. It's
Jonathan
just
Skate?
Something like that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I mean, skip it, honestly.
Okay.
The was it Day of the Dead Contagion or whatever that one was, is a much better movie, and that's saying a lot.
Anything else?
I saw the latest Star Wars. That was good. I had a lot of fun with that one.
Another problematic person I want in my pants. Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I didn't think Snoke was your type.
Clearly you haven't been paying attention. I love a like moving mummy.
And that's pretty much it. I mean, I haven't really seen a lot.
Fair. Okay. Well, I've watched a couple of things. I'll run through them really quickly. I watched a movie that I had been really looking forward to. It's called The Ritual. It's on Netflix right now. This is something I mentioned in our my most anticipated list, because I read the book by it was originally a novel by Adam Neville, and it's about like these guys who a friend of theirs has passed away, and so to honor him, they go on this hike through the forest, or through like on a hiking trail in Sweden, and somebody gets injured, so they have to cut through the forest, and that is a bad idea because there are things happening in the forest that you don't really want to run into. And like kind of the breakdown of the friendship occurs as they're being hunted by something. And it was a book I really liked. It was like full of atmosphere. I mean, it kind of has a little bit of a Blair Witchy vibe to it, in that it's like people lost in a forest while being hunted by a supernatural entity of some kind. And there's definitely some of that in this, but I thought it was actually, my expectations were so high, I was at high risk of being disappointed, and ultimately I kind of liked it. I was pretty satisfied with it. They changed some of the characters towards the end. There's some like people that they run into in the book that are like these black metal kids named like Finnick and Loki that are replaced with other characters, and I was kind of looking forward to seeing them, so I was a little bummed about that. But overall, I actually thought this was pretty solid. It's on Netflix. It's like super easy to get your hands on. It doesn't break any massive molds. Like I wouldn't say, I don't want to overhype it and have you be underwhelmed by it. But like it's a solid little easy to watch, entertaining, spooky in parts. There's one scene sort of like that is like a, almost like a church situation. It's not in a church, but it's similar to that, that is really kind of chilling and creepy. And yeah, so I would recommend The Ritual with reasonable expectations. It's very good. I liked it a lot.
That's great. I saw the trailer like a month before it came out, and it looked really good.
I think you would like it, Ariel. I personally have I love like folk horror.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. A Wicker Man, or what was that one where, why can't I think of it? Where there's like the two hitmen.
Oh,
Kill List.
The one with,
yes,
the vet.
Yes, yes, the Kill, yes, List.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, so it's in that, yeah, sort of vein of, yeah, things. So if you like a folk horror Blair Witchy kind of thing, I think you will like The Ritual. I'm into this. I don't know why. I maybe it's something that's just sort of like human instinctual, like in our DNA, to like fear the wild places and, mm-hmm, like. But that stuff always works for me, and I get, even if it's not scary, I'm like, I'm just sort of into it. You know, mm-hmm, I don't know. So okay. The other thing I watched is a movie called Mom and Dad. Have you guys seen the trailer for this?
I've never even heard of it.
Yes.
So. Yeah, Sarah, I knew I could count on you. How about you, Jody? Have you seen the trailer for this?
No, I don't think so. This isn't this isn't the movie that came out around 7 or 8 years ago. This is a new.
No. This is with Nicolas Cage and Selma Blair.
Okay.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, so it is, like you said, the new Nicolas Cage, Selma Blair joint. And in this, it's directed by one of the guys, one of the two guys that directed Hellrider, or no, not, what's his name? The Ghostwriter sequel, like the super batshit one. And this one is super bad. This movie's super batshit too. So Selma Blair, first of all, you have to suspend your disbelief that Selma Blair is married to Nick Cage in this. It's not super believable, but like once shit gets going, it doesn't really matter. But they're married and they have two kids. One of them's a teenager, one of them's like in middle school, maybe. And something unexplained happens that makes all the parents, like it's a signal or something, all the parents want to kill their children. So like not other people's kids, not all kids, their kids. Mm-hmm. And so basically what you have is Selma Blair and Nick Cage going fucking crazy trying to hunt down their children. And Nick Cage goes full Nick,
yes,
Cage. There's like a part where he's like trying to bang his like tear apart his car with a sledgehammer to get his kid inside, and he's like, it's madness. It's absolute fucking madness. And then there's like a third act twist that is amazing. Like this is by no means like a quote-unquote good movie. It is like full-on exploitation, and it's ridiculous and over the top and like really dumb but super fun. Mm. I think you guys would enjoy it. Like, do not expect something that you'll walk away and be like, I have learned something new about the human condition. but like, there's a part where like her sister's giving birth, and like as soon as the baby comes out of her, she's trying to kill the baby.
Oh shit.
And they're having to like restrain her, and she's like trying to kill this like they're trying to like cut the umbilical cord and not let her get at the baby at the same time. Yeah, it's good. It, like, if that sounds like, I could do that, then I think you'll like Mom and Dad. Especially cool. For, like, Nick Cage singing the Hokey Pokey while swinging a sledgehammer. I mean, that, like, that's a thing that happens.
I think I need to see that, then.
Sarah, I think you especially will enjoy this movie.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
It's fun. It's really fun. And it's fun because, like, the parents kind of go back and forth because, like, they only want to kill their kids. So, like, when they see their kids, they go into, like, 28 days later rage frenzy. But, like, but then they'll, like, sit down and talk to each other, like, I don't know, whatever. And, like, oh, maybe we should just, like, set them on fire or something, you know? So, yeah, definitely check out Mom and Dad.
Sounds fun.
All right. Anything else before we move on?
No, can I quickly plug our Letterboxd page?
Shall
I do that at the end when we're doing like
Twitter? Let's do it now. You brought it up. Let's make it happen.
Okay. So I started a Letterboxd page for the Zombie Girls, and that's at letterboxd.com/zombiegirls. So that's letterboxd.com/zombiegirls. So that's where you can find lists of movies. It's just basically movie lists, but I've got all of our, or I'm working on getting all of our ZGBGs and our top lists of the year and our Netflix picks and stuff like that. So if you you know, don't have a pen on you when you're listening to us, you know, recommending all these wonderful movies, you can go to our Letterboxd page and go, oh yeah, I remember the ZGBG on, I don't know, Haunted House movies. Let's check it out. And then you can find all the lists there. So check us out, follow us, say hello. Should have quite a few hefty lists going on there by the time this comes out.
The hoarder in me is so into this.
It's weird going backwards. Because I'm going backwards listening to like the last kind of 20 minutes of all our shows.
Oh God.
Yeah. No, it's good. It's good. I've got our 31 Days of Halloween on there. So I'll put our Women in Horror picks up there too when that's done.
Oh, that's great, Jodie.
Yeah. It's fun.
That's awesome. I'm loving it. Like you, I went back and was trying to find some of the old stuff to help you out. And wow, the people that like Sarah, Jodie, you included, that like stuck with us through those early episodes are
I haven't gone back and listening. Are they really painful?
Dude, they're so bad.
Oh, like, that's
the audio quality, because you have to remember when we started this podcast, it was with a Guitar Hero or like GarageBand
mic
that we plugged into the computer and gathered around like it was a campfire.
Yeah, I forgot that. I remember when you got your first like snowball mic, we were so excited.
Was it the basket case one where somebody kept pounding their fist on the table?
I mean, can
probably.
You blame us?
That episode was a mess. That was a hard one to record.
It started off so strong.
It did. We were having so much fun, but it just kept getting later and later and later.
Was it Summer that kept getting the name of the lady wrong? She kept calling her Granny Smith or Granny Apple or something?
Probably.
That sounds right.
Because that's where I came up with the Zombie Girls drinking game, that every time the fist would bang, you'd have to shout Hulk Smash. Every time the Granny's name was mispronounced, you had to take a shot.
Yeah.
Oh, I love you, Sarah.
God, that was a fucking crazy day. I remember at the end just being like, we were sitting... I can picture us all like sitting on couches and just being like, oh, what have we done?
Why did we sign up for this?
when Blyle is like in a power loader, like saving his little blob children. I was like, fuck.
His puppies?
There's a little memory lane for you folks. I don't know that I recommend going back and listening to that if you came up later, but just know it's an option.
Yeah.
All right. Should we talk? Definitely go check out Letterboxd. Jodie's doing great works there. She's sacrificing her time and mental health to go back through old episodes to create that for content for the audience we know and love. So go check that out for sure. All right. Should we talk about the movies?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's start off with The Bad Batch. Sarah, would you mind taking this bad boy?
The Bad Batch, directed by Anna Lily Ampure.
We're all gonna say it differently. This is pathetic.
No, I'm laughing because you, I don't know if you were on when I could not say her name. We have failed so badly.
Yeah.
Amirpour.
I think it's Amirpour.
Amirpour.
Yeah.
It's directed by her, and it's starring Suki Waterhouse, Jason Momoa, Jada Fink, with Keanu Reeves and Jim Carrey. In an unspecified near future, a young woman named Arlen, played by Suki Waterhouse, is processed and dropped inside a fenced-off area of Texas, where people deemed undesirable by society are forced to live and fend for themselves as outcasts. They are known as the Bad Batch. Shortly after, Arlen is attacked by two women in a golf cart. When she wakes up, she finds that she has been chained and realizes that she's with cannibals who have removed her right arm and right leg. She eventually escapes on a skateboard and is picked up in the desert by the Hermit, played by Jim Carrey, who is a mute vagrant who takes her to a town called Comfort, where she is cared for and given a prosthetic leg. Later, Arlen heads out to the desert where she sees a similar golf cart owned by the cannibals, and she finds a mother and daughter scavenging through the waste. Realizing that they are cannibals, she kills the mother for revenge and takes the daughter with her back to Comfort, only to lose her at a rave thrown by the Dream, played by Keanu Reeves, who was the cult-like leader of Comfort. Meanwhile, Miami Man, played by Jason Momoa, turns out to be the father of the little girl and goes after his daughter. Eventually, Miami Man and Arlen come face-to-face in the desert, where Miami Man insists Arlen goes back to Comfort to retrieve his daughter.
All right. So cool. What did you think of The Bad Batch?
It felt like a really long 90s music video.
Mm.
Yeah,
like I expected Alanis Morissette to show up in a Jeep and a flowy gown and like you know, it was like You Want to Know and that Janet Jackson song and like pretty much like every like 90s video that ever took place in the desert.
Yeah, fair.
it did feel long. I have to confess, I fell asleep a couple of times during this movie. But when I woke up, I didn't feel like I'd missed anything. And I know that we, you know, we're showcasing women in horror and everything like that. But I don't think I really liked this movie that much.
That's fair.
Yeah.
How about you, Ariel? What did you think?
So I didn't know anything about this movie before I went into it. Like, I hadn't really read much about it or really knew what I was getting into. And so at the beginning where you see her, you know, get her limbs cut off and then she's like crawling through the sand trying to get away from the cannibals, I was kind of like, ooh, I don't know if I'm going to like this movie. But then it really changes kind of the tone and what's going on. And I think that while it did maybe drag in a couple places, I actually really enjoyed sort of the bizarreness of this world and kind of the interesting things that were happening. I thought it was really hilarious that Jim Carrey played this this hermit guy with the shopping cart going around the desert. I thought he did a really good job, even though he never said a word.
Yeah, no lie.
And
yeah.
Keanu Reeves as the cult leader was pretty hilarious, and I thought that part was really interesting. Jason Momoa was really great. I liked his performance too, and kind of the relationship with his daughter and the interesting things that happened with him and Arlen. I don't know. I know that it was a little bit slow, but I actually really enjoyed watching it.
I think because it starts with that cutting off of her leg and her arm, and nothing really felt that bizarre after that. Like, I felt like, oh, this movie's going to be batshit. Okay, let's go. And then kind of nothing, it never really kind of lives up to that. And maybe if that had happened midway through, that would have been a really weird, neat twist that your main character gets, like, almost cut in half so early on. But I just don't think it delivered on that afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying, because when it starts that way, I had assumed that the rest of the movie was going to be more about the cannibal part of Bad Batch, the cannibal part of the society, and maybe her trying to get away from them or them attacking other people. But it really moves away from that, and like 90% of the movie has nothing to do with that. It's more about Comfort and Arlen and trying to get this little girl. And
well, the wife and I were watching it together, and when I found out that the director's from Bakersfield, we were watching it, I'm like, oh, when she gets to the cannibals, I'm like, oh, so she's in Oildale now. And then she gets out to Comfort. I'm like, oh, she's in Burning Man now.
Oh, you recognize everything?
Well, yeah. Well, it's actually filmed. It was filmed over in Nyland in the over by the Salton Sea.
Salt Block. Okay.
So a lot of that is like where they have like Salvation Mountain and Slab mm-hmm. City and East Jesus and all of those places that are out there that are like, you know, these makeshift desert towns that actually like look like set pieces from the movie.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Ariel on this one, surprisingly. I think I was really looking forward to this movie when I saw the trailer. I think I posted it on the Zombie Girls Facebook page, and I was like, hell yes, this looks amazing. And then when it came out and the reviews were not good, I was really kind of like, bummed, because the trailer looked so good. Mm-hmm. And so I think it helped to lower my expectations a little bit. So when I went into it, I did not expect to like it. And what I think is interesting about it, and this is true when we get to the other one too, is that it's like this art house lens.
Yeah.
On, in this case, an exploitation film. We get mm-hmm. like an art house lens on a Western when we get to the next one. But like, I kind of like that it took all of the tropes of an exploitation film, but then it was like this really dreamlike, surreal kind of film. My biggest complaints about it were actually the terrible accents.
I love Jason Momoa's accent.
What are you talking about? It's so bad. It's like sometimes it's Russian, sometimes it's Cuban.
It's all just kind of mush mouth.
Yes.
Thank God I had the subtitles on.
Oh yeah, 100%. Subtitles are necessito.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I don't know.
I didn't even realize he was talking. He had a shirt off the whole time. I was like, oh, he's saying.
I thought you would like it on just like the flesh alone.
That's fine.
Five stars.
I don't know. He had a kind of like porno mustache, though. I wasn't really into that.
Okay. Fair enough.
The soundtrack was amazing.
The soundtrack is great.
Yeah, she does a really good job with the soundtracks. And I agree with you, Rachel. It does have a real dreamlike quality. And I think one of the really cool things that she does, the director does with both of the films, is that she really creates a world, like the world building of it. The feel of the movie is really interesting and different and cool.
Yeah. I really thought like Keanu Reeves might have given his best performance in this. Like, you know how there's always like a Keanu-ness to everything he does?
Yep.
There's something about like the set of his jaw or like the way that he delivers lines. Like, there always is something stilted about it. And I love Keanu. I'm not talking shit about Keanu because I actually adore him. But this is the first thing I've seen where he's like totally unlike himself. The only other time I can immediately think of is in The Gift, when he's playing sort of like the abusive redneck.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that and mm-hmm. this are his best performances. Like his and I don't know if it's the prosthetics, because he has kind of like,
I think that helped.
I do too. But like, he embodies the sort of like 70s guru in a way that is weird. It's very un-Keanu, and I don't know, like, he has a very signature style, like it or love, you know, like it or hate it, but in this movie he somehow manages to sort of shed that. And I know that like some people have said about this movie that they're unconvinced that maybe Anna can't get a good performance out of an actor, but I actually feel like Keanu is proof to the opposite, and that in some of the things, maybe like the accent and stuff, are choices that she's making that you may not agree with, but I don't think that they're a sign of not being able to like handle actors. She's making like aesthetic choices.
Yeah.
I also think this movie is freaking gorgeous. Like the expansive shots, and you know, like when she's having that like drug trip in the desert and there's just like all the stars around her and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, it is 90s music video, but it's through like an art house lens. You know what I mean? It's like, and that's the thing, is like, she's very much playing with the aesthetics of the 90s, like sort of like the cast off of the 90s with the clothes and the music. And I mean, maybe it's still too fresh for us to like really, like, we're still very much in like an 80s nostalgia place that like we can't fully appreciate the 90s-ness of it yet. I don't know. But I don't know. Is it long? Yes. Do I feel comfortable recommending it like a blanket recommendation? No. It is not for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked it more than I expected to. Okay. And I actually think, based on the way that both of the movies end, they're interesting companion pieces, because they have basically the same ending.
Yeah, they really do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Two people going off together.
And I feel, and I kind of like this idea of we introduce Miami Man as sort of like this brute. Cause I mean, like, he's physically imposing and he's like running a cannibal camp, but he's like actually this cannibal with the heart of an artist.
Yeah.
Who like, and you know, like there's always sort of that story of like, you know, doing what you have to survive. I mean, Jesus Christ, there's like 15 seasons of The Walking Dead that are about this. But in some ways, like there's some shorthand here, but I kind of like, by the end, he manages to be sympathetic enough. It might just be the Momoa of it all, but like that I'm kind of like, yeah, he's a cannibal, but like, you got to do what you got to do. You're in the Bad Batch.
Yeah, no, I agree with all of that. And like I said, I really did enjoy it, and yeah, I think it was beautiful to look at, and I think the soundtrack was really cool, and I do think some of the performances are better than what it sounds like maybe other people think, but yeah, I like you said, I'm not sure if I would recommend it to everybody, but I think a lot of people would probably enjoy it if they gave it a chance.
The other thing is, like, what is Giovanni Ribisi doing in this movie?
Yeah, right. He's in it for so little of it in such an odd way. And
I thought he
like,
was going to matter later.
Yeah,
he
so did I.
Does. Also, yeah. Diego Luna shows up as, like, just a DJ, like, on a video screen. The DJ at the dream party is Diego Luna. I'm just like, wow. Yeah. Anna's, like, she's making friends. She's networking. She's getting all these, like, actual actors to do, like, tiny little things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I the dream character too was really interesting to me. Like there's that part at the end when, you know, she's taking the kid and he's surrounded by like all of these pregnant women with machine guns, and I was like, "Oh my god, this is like peak exploitation, right?"
Yep.
You know. But at the same time, it was I don't know. I just thought like her influence, you could see the influences, but it was like she definitely had her own vision for it. I mean, it's fine if you don't like it. Like, it's to each their own. Like, I'm not trying to convince anybody. If you didn't like it, you didn't like it. But I don't know. I didn't think it was as bad as the reviews made me expect it to be.
Uh-huh. Mm. Yeah. Oh, I liked the t-shirts that the pregnant women were wearing.
True. Oh, like
they were all
the
wearing
dreams.
These. The dreams inside me. So bad.
Yeah. I can't decide if I am into his giant neon boombox or not.
Right.
Oh, I thought that was cool.
I thought it was really neat. You know what? I was into it, and then you said Burning Man, and I was like, oh, am I not into it anymore? Because that is so Burning Man.
Yeah, just a little.
Ooh. All right. Any other thoughts before we move on?
No, I thought it was...
Oh, I enjoyed it. I mean... Yeah, like I said, it's long. It's like watching an extended 90s music video. I didn't say that was a bad thing. It's just,
Yeah, I think visually it was really great, and I think she creates a really great soundscape. I just think it didn't need to be 2 hours long. I think I could have had this in, you know, an hour and 20 probably. Yeah, it would have been much better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with
Tighten
that.
Tighten that fucker up.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like, as I said, it started out so graphic, and I don't think it ever, like, I think it peaked too soon, and the exploitation factor, I just felt like it wasn't really sustained. So I'm coming at it more of a I see what you were going for kind of thing, I guess. I wouldn't say avoid it. Like, if this sound like, I think people have a pretty good gauge on whether or not they think something sounds like it's for them, so check it out if you feel like you're interested in it.
All right, The Girl Walks Home at Night. Ariel, break it down.
Oh, okay, hang on, sorry. Okay. A Girl Walks Home Alone at Midnight is a 2014 Iranian-American film written and directed by Anna Lily Amanpour and starring Sheila Vond and Arash Mirandi. It's set in a ghost town called Bad City, where a young vampire woman roams the streets at night, killing abusive men. Arash is a lonely young man dealing with the loss of his mother and his drug-addicted father, who's in debt to a local drug dealer. Soon the two main characters meet and begin falling in love after the vampire girl kills the drug dealer and Arash steals his money and stash. And there's a really cute kitty.
Oh, yeah.
I had a cat that looked like him.
Aww. I actually saved a screenshot of when they're sitting in the car and all of them are looking forward, even the cat.
That was such a cute scene with the cat sitting in between them.
I mean, that cat was the most chill cat on the planet.
Yeah,
like,
it was.
Yeah. between that, like, what is she giving these animals? They're like, right. The bunny.
I know that they're just like, yeah, walking around where all this crazy shit's happening, and the bunny's just like,
talk
okay.
About them like eating her pet, and like the little girl's crying and eating her pet.
That was so sad.
That was so harsh.
Sorry. So, Ariel, what did you think of A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night?
I had a little bit of mixed feelings about this. The movie is absolutely gorgeous to look at. It's all done in black and white, like really high contrast. And all of the shots like are just amazing. I mean, even a guy just kind of like standing in a tunnel with the light behind him is stunning. And there are these sort of weird set pieces of kind of odd things happening, like a person dancing with a balloon. And you don't know exactly what's going on, but they're just gorgeous. I love
that. Yeah.
That might have been my favorite.
Like, some mornings are like that. You wake up and someone's dancing in a vintage nudie shirt with a balloon.
Exactly.
You know.
It happens, you know? The soundscape for this is really cool, too. There's so much sort of, there's very, very little dialogue in this, just like there was in the previous movie that we were talking about. But there's a ton of, like, ambient sounds and just kind of, I don't know, just like weird sounds happening that make it feel more isolated and desolate and creepy, because they're in this, you know, ghost town kind of place. And everything feels just like a little bit weird and a little bit off. You know, there's like this giant ditch with dead bodies and nobody seems to care.
Yeah, what was that about? Is that a metaphor? Is that like just an artistic choice, or is it actually meant to have some sort of significance?
I imagine there's probably some sort of significance, because I was right before we were recording, I started listening to this interview with the director and the main star. And mm-hmm. She was talking about how basically every part of this movie, the decisions were made before they started filming. So like every scene, she had already decided the way it was going to look and what songs were going to be playing and what kind of sounds were going to be happening. So it seems like everything was a very conscious decision.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that was too. I'm just not quite sure what it means, other than maybe just like the sort of lack of caring people have, because it's so such like a sad, lonely place. Mm. I thought the performances were pretty good, and yeah, it was just, I mean, amazing to look at. I thought there were some, I mean, the metaphors of sort of this, you know, there it's a woman alone at night, and that tends to be where women often get victimized. But instead, she's the predator. Is, you know, it's kind of obvious, and you get that pretty quickly, but I still think it's solid. All of that being said, it does, I think this feels a lot like Sarah said before, almost like an extended music video. And while I enjoyed it, I wouldn't put it up there as like one of my top favorite movies, you know?
Mm. What do you think, Jody?
Yeah, so I watched this morning, and I didn't enjoy it quite as much as I did when I saw it in the cinema. So this, I did see it in cinemas, and then
okay.
I think it's just a different situation when you're watching it on a big screen in a dark room, and your attention is fully focused on the screen, and you can't get away, and you get really absorbed. And I didn't feel quite as absorbed today, and I did feel like it dragged a little bit.
Yeah.
I guess I think this was a short film. And I was trying to track it down, but I couldn't find it anywhere. So I don't know where you can get to see the short that it's based on. But it did feel a little bit like a short film stretched out. And I do like films that take the time to just linger on shots or sounds or music. And I think this film did that really, really well. And it's really gorgeous. The cinematography is just amazing. I did really like it. I don't think I was in the right mindset to really get absorbed in a film like that today. I like the setting and Bad City. It felt like a mixture of Sin City and Eraserhead.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so those felt like influence. And apparently, Anna Lilliamapour has made a graphic novel based on this movie. And if you do a Google image, like the pictures look amazing. So I don't know if she was the artist as well or what, but it looks really, really great. And I think this would lend itself really well to a graphic novel. So I want to see if I can try and get a hold of it.
Yeah,
but I like what you were saying, Ariel, about the kind of horror trope of the girl walking home alone at night. That's always like a vehicle for horror.
Yep.
And this just kind of flips it, and she's not the victim at all, but she's the threat, and actually preys on the men who treat women as submissives, because she goes after the drug dealer.
Yeah.
And she kills Arush's father after he's abusive towards the prostitute character. And I like how kind of those characters are maybe the real vampires, like the drug dealing pimp character. And it kind of
he looks like the Persian version of that, like, South African band. I think you're freaky and I like you a lot.
That band. Yeah.
Antwoord?
Yes, yes, yes. That's what he looks
I'm
like.
Pleased that I didn't know who you meant. And so I did really like how like the atmosphere and the emotion kind of take priority over narrative.
Yeah.
And it does feel long in that way, but if I think if you're in the mood for it, I think it's really great, but it did show, I think, that it felt a bit stretched.
Yeah, I mean, it's very stylized and everything is gorgeous, but I think it's maybe some of that comes above kind of the content of like a plot, which, you know, I mean, that's, I think sometimes it's okay in film to just sort of explore ideas and visuals, and it doesn't always have to be super plot or dialogue heavy, but I think maybe, yeah, if it had been shortened a bit, you wouldn't have sort of noticed that missing quite as much.
Yeah,
I
maybe.
Also thought, oh, sorry.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, I really want to try and watch the short, but I wonder if, I don't know how long ago the short was made, and maybe her filmmaking has evolved and, you know, improved since then. But maybe this would have been captured in a little 8-minute short better.
Yeah,
I don't know. You guys, it's a Western. Like, that's what a Western is. Like, go watch and, you know, Once Upon a Time in the West, and it's just like long scenes of people staring at each other.
No, I mean, that's absolutely true.
So, like, if for a horror movie, like, if that's the genre we're working in, yeah, I agree. I agree that it's slow and light on plot, and like, lingering scenes can go on too long. But through the lens of a Western, I think it's, like, that's exactly what a freaking Western is like. Like, she's trying to create atmosphere and mood and tension, like, with those long pauses. And they, for the same reason, sometimes it's hard to get into a Western. Like, you have to be in, like you said, like, in a opportunity where, like, you can be, like, a captured audience. Like, really be wanting to, like, invest the time and, like, attention into it to get sucked into the atmosphere. And then what it is like, an attention and atmosphere experience as opposed to a plot-driven one.
Yeah, and so, that's what, like, I was saying. I think that it's okay for films to explore that. And I didn't have a problem sitting through it. I mean, I love Westerns, and I totally get that sometimes it needs to be, you know, that they are set at a slower pace and that we linger on things for a long time. And I enjoyed this film. I just think that maybe there are a couple of places where it could have been cut down a bit.
I just, I don't know about that. I just feel like I wasn't in the mood on a Sunday morning to watch it, you know, with the sun out and everything. But I felt like I wish I knew more about Iranian culture, because I don't know if she was, if this was an allegory for anything politically, or, you know, like you said about the ditch full of corpses, and whether it means anything.
Like,
so I
wish is that the revolution? Are we talking about?
Right, I wish I could tap into that.
I felt that same thing. Like, if I had known more, maybe I would have caught on to things, because the film, and she did this in the other one too, is so referential, right? It kind of feels like there's 50s greaser stuff. It's obviously a Western and kind of an old vampire Nosferatu kind of thing. And it feels a little bit like Eraserhead or a Quentin Tarantino movie, like during the slow dance scenes.
Yeah, definitely getting a Tarantino vibe.
Yeah, so with all of that, and there's, like, you know, the 80s pop posters on the wall of her little apartment or whatever it was, and all of these different references that I'm aware of, but it made me think, like, how much more maybe I'm not getting because I don't have that experience.
Well, I read an interview with her this morning where she was saying that, you know, because obviously she couldn't film in Iran and stuff, you know, she decided to film in the areas surrounding Bakersfield, but she was going for, like, a dreamlike quality with it, and that the characters fit in the dream world, not necessarily in the world. But yeah, we keep saying, like, Eraserhead, it's got a very Lynchian feel. Like, you know, there's characters that are there that you're just, they fit in that world, but they wouldn't fit anywhere else.
Yeah, it does feel very kind of unstuck in time and place.
Yeah, I personally enjoyed it. I mean, it does drag. Like, if you're like I said, if you're expecting a horror film, the pacing of it isn't very good. You will get bored. You will get distracted. But yeah, as far as like a Western that happens to have a vampire in it, it's a really good like, I don't know. You want Western noir, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. You know, I think that's probably the best description of it.
I also like how like it could have been funny and it was just short of making jokes. But like when the pimp guy is making her suck his finger and she just bites it off and then
oh,
it just, like,
that was so great because I was just like, stop sticking your fucking finger in people's mouths and back.
So she just, you know, chews it off and puts it back in his own mouth.
Yes, like, that was amazing.
Like, but it could have been really goofy. And the bit where she's skateboarding down the street and she's got her Chador cloak kind of like billowing out behind her. And then she bumps into Dracula, you know, and that could have been like, that could have been a joke out of what we do in the shadows.
But it
was just this side of, okay, it's kind of cute rather than just being like super goofy. Yeah.
I love that part with her cape billowing and it's like, she's a superhero. That was great.
Yeah, that was really cool. And I like the bit where she scares a little boy straight.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That poor little boy.
Yeah.
What a hard fucking life.
Yeah, just planting a little seed of, you know, just be a good boy, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved all the like stalking scenes. I know we talked about it a little bit, but there's one in particular where she's across the street from Arash's dad.
Oh yeah,
Hussein, I think his name was, and she's keeping pace with him and mirroring his actions. Mm-hmm. Like, these are the kind of like cat and mouse shit that women experience on the streets. And I know we've talked about this a little bit, but I just thought that was such an effective thing. Like, it starts off with the more standard sort of like you turn around and the person's facing you or following you. Mm-hmm. But like this other, like this extra, like sort of playing with him, I thought was really chilling and cool. And like, such wish fulfillment.
Yeah, like absolutely.
It's the same feeling I get when I watch something like Jessica Jones, and like to be able to just move through the world because you have a power that people don't realize that you have. Mm-hmm. That you are safe in a world that, you know, average people or average women are not. It's like there's something so like I said, wish fulfillment.
Yeah, not feeling like you have to look over your shoulder all the time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like even just aside from like the punishing of bad men, just to feel safe at night would be so free. Mm-hmm. I also thought it was really cool, like the different aesthetic of her when she's hunting and she has her chador on and she creates it, like it creates this line that when it's in shadow is like a very reminiscent, sort of like it's a very classic sort of old horror trope, right? But then like in her home she's like in her striped boat neck shirts and like it's like this very cool, very modern woman. I don't know, I mean these are intentional choices, but I don't totally understand everything and nuance of it, but I just think it's really cool. And visually, like, to see the two sides of her is fun.
I really love that.
I just want to know how she gets the blood out.
Wait, what?
Right. Of her bow necks?
Oh.
Yeah.
Maybe she has a stack of them. You know what I mean?
That's why she wears the black chador on top.
Yeah, that's true.
To protect her.
That thing's like made of like, it's like a windbreaker, actually. So what do we think? Any other thoughts about this movie specifically you guys want to get into?
I mean, we've picked it for Women in Horror Month, but would you call this a horror movie?
I mean, sometimes I think about like what qualifies something as a horror movie, and it seems pretty loose.
It is.
Like there's stuff like right at the epicenter where you're like, okay, Friday the 13th is a horror movie. But like, I think this is on the fringes, but it's also like on the fringe of like a Western or a noir or a drama or art house, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a scary movie. Although the part where she's, like I said, where she's mimicking him is pretty chilling.
Yeah.
Like I don't know that I felt frightened, but I felt like a little, chill. Mm-hmm.
Why do you think she killed the homeless guy? Was it just like she also has to eat, so she just kills and she tries to kill?
Well, she didn't. That was the night she didn't kill Arash.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. I gotta forgot eat about somebody.
That. Yeah.
Forgot what do we think that. Of Arash? We haven't even talked about him at all.
I enjoyed him.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was really likable. I thought he's got these great, really expressive eyes. So does she. And like that scene with the two of them in her apartment, it's so slow and deliberate. But like, even though nothing happens exactly, like I felt like there was so much chemistry between the two of them on screen.
Mm.
I thought it was really effective.
Yeah, I love the tension of that because it was a mix of the chemistry, the romantic chemistry, but also like her just letting him tons of room to hang himself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're like, is he going to overstep? And we know as the audience that what's going to happen the minute he oversteps.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's like, but we've spent time getting to know Arash and are invested in him. So like, you're like, don't do it, buddy. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Don't do it. Don't be a nice guy of okay, Cupid. Be just a nice guy.
I wasn't sure how to feel about him because we like him. And then he gets the briefcase right after the drug dealer gets killed. So he's like, oh, great, you know, he gets all the money. But then he starts selling the drugs, and I wasn't sure how to feel about him after that.
Because he's so upset
selling
with his dad.
E at a party.
Yeah.
He
wasn't selling the heroin.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
still
actually
had
a good point. We never
heroin.
Saw them
doing Yeah,
that.
That's true.
Yeah.
And then, okay, I mentioned this when we were talking about Bad Batch, like, that they have really similar endings. And I think it seems like something that Anna is interested in like sort of exploring this idea of like two broken people finding there's like these layers of complexity. Like in Bad Batch, like he led the cannibals that like ate her and she killed his wife, like his baby mama. We don't know what their relationship is, but then they find a connection. And in this, like she's a vampire, he's a drug dealer, she killed his dad. But they and like it's unsaid but known, I think, to or at least that there's some she has some level of involvement in the murder. But like he chooses to, it's like a reverse where he chooses to stay with her.
Yeah, because he sees the cat at the end and puts two and two together.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I got kind of a let the right one in sort of vibe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
At the end.
But I think too, it's also freeing because. In a lot of ways, she freed him because, you know, his dad was dragging him down. He was taking care of his dad and even kicking his dad out. You know, as soon as the money's gone, his dad will be back and he'll take him back in and care for him again. And, you know, so I think because like he looks at the cat and he's looking at the cat and it's just like he could have said something at that point. He could have said something at. You know, there's about 40 different points that he could have said something to her about it, and he chooses not to. And I think, you know, it's because she has freed him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I think you're right. I love that scene where he sees the cat and you see slowly like the realization kind of coming across his face. And then, when they drive away in the car and then he stops and he's like pacing back in front and forth in front of it and then looks, you know, at her and the cat. In the car, I think that's it. You think he just like makes the choice? Okay,
yeah,
I'm okay with that. Like it happened, she did this, but now I'm free and like let's go have a new life or something.
Mm-hmm. What do we think about the prostitute character? What do we think the significance of her of Addie was?
Holy crap!
What
a chicken what? Just walked by. Hang on.
What the fuck?
Where the hell do you live? You have chickens in your apartment. I mean, seriously.
Are you a member of the Bad Batch? What's happening?
Have you got Jason Momoa with you? Mm.
Share.
Right?
I'm so sorry.
What happened?
This is like the second or third time I've seen just like a random rooster walk by outside my back door. And it's like a glass door, so I could see it just like wandering by. I don't
know
who
the fuck
owns a rooster.
Is it some like hipster escapee? Like it broke out of some sort of like hipsters
like urban garden?
Yeah.
An apartment rooster. Yeah. I have no idea. It's so fucking weird.
It could be somebody's comfort chicken.
True.
Oh, right. Like that peacock or whatever.
Yep. Mm-hmm. All right. So, again, any thoughts on the prostitute, Addie? And like the conversation specifically that they're having about her like losing desire.
Well, I mean, obviously the girl has the desire to hunt, to feed, to kill. I mean, but also I think that given the circumstances, I mean, you basically have the prostitute who is being fed on by all these vampiric men. And then you have the female vampire who is like, what do you wish for? Why do you keep this map? You know, why are you saving money? Why are you doing these things if you've lost the desire? You know, the pimp tells her, you know, you're 30, you're getting old. I think that the vampire maybe realizes that she could easily have been her if circumstances were different. I think that there's that connection that she realizes that she could be the prey instead of the predator.
Okay, I mean, I need to think some more about this.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I hadn't watched it this morning, and I had.
Yeah, me
I had.
Too.
I had interrupted my like 6 straight hours of watching Queer Eye to watch this yesterday. But you know,
yeah, I watched it last night. I definitely wish I had more time to kind of stew on it.
Mm-hmm. So, what do we think about? I'm gonna attempt it. Here we go. Anna Lily Amirpour as a filmmaker.
Oh, I think she's really great. I mean, I think all these stylistic choices, all of these references she makes, the sound design, I think all of it's excellent. And I'd be really curious to see what else she does, because most of these films, while they have a lot of similarities, they're really different, too. And I would be excited to see her do something else in the future, like something totally different.
Yeah, I agree. And I think if somebody was to complain about these movies that they're too much style, not enough substance, I don't think that's a real problem, and because I really like the style, especially of this one, and I would love to see more of it. Yeah, I'm really excited to see what she does next.
Looks like she's doing TV. She did an episode of Legion, which I think is a good fit, because man, that is a movie that is super style heavy. Did any of you guys watch Legion?
No.
Oh, it's so good.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, it's excellent.
I want to see a romantic comedy. Seriously, I want to see her do a romantic comedy, do all the stupid tropes and like exaggerate them, throw a little bit of exploitation in there, you know, but do it with the long shots and the art, you know, the artistic and, you know, of course, better music than what's in normally in a romantic comedy.
Yeah,
but I want to see that. I want to see that.
That could be really cool.
Yeah.
I'd be on for that.
And have it in a scrubby little town like Taft or Strathmore or, you know, East Jesus.
What do you want to see, Jodes?
Just more of a girl rather than a bad batch, I think. Just like more just cool references to other stuff. I like the Lynchian stuff and the Tarantino stuff. I think, her take on a romantic comedy, I think, would be really, really neat. I think if she should just keep making movies the way she wants to make them and the way she wants them to look.
Very cool. How about you, Ariel? Any dreams for Anna?
No, just more of this. You know, I'd be curious to see how she develops over time. I also heard that she made like a stop motion movie in Germany about roaches, which I'd be curious to see what that is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to see, I would like to see a third, I feel like she's trying to explore an idea with both of these movies.
Yeah.
Like, there's a theme that's sort of a through line between two of them, and I don't know that it's fully realized yet, and I would like to see a third movie that maybe brings it all together, kind of like how, like, John Carpenter has his, like, apocalypse trilogy. I would like to see, like, whatever this thing that she's sort of playing with and exploring and trying to say, I'd like to see one more film like maybe in a romantic comedy or another horror or another some genre that like finally kind of coalesces these ideas that she's kind of playing with, I think would be really interesting. I also just want her to work, you know what I mean? She
is absolutely
clearly talented and clearly has a vision, and I want to see her get lots and lots and lots of work.
Well, I mean, people really loved A Girl, so hopefully that'll happen.
Right, but then they were, like, so ready to shit on Bad Batch.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
You know? But, you know, everybody has, like, the sophomore slump or whatever. I personally didn't find it to be a huge slump, but
no, me neither.
That's, like, a thing, like, you know? All right, any other thoughts before we move on?
Well, if she wants to let Jason Momoa take off his shirt again, that's okay with me.
he can be the guy in the romantic comedy, you know.
That would be fine.
There you go.
Yeah.
So is there a Jason Momoa property where he's had a shirt on? I'm not being sarcastic. I'm trying to
Frontier, because you know it snows.
Okay, you're right. All right. That's because I was thinking. I'm like, Conan, no shirt. Game of Thrones, no shirt. Baywatch, no shirt.
Aquaman.
I think he just had like a vest on and right. Stargate SG-1 or whatever, or Stargate yeah. Atlantis.
Stargate SVU.
Do not want to watch that. Can you imagine what Stargate SVU would be?
That sounds terrible.
I mean, what would the chevrons locking onto the Stargate? No. My mind is going very dark places, Sarah. Okay. So, should we move on to Jody's portion of the show?
Yeah. I'm still actually kind of working. I haven't finalized my list yet, but I'll do it as we're speaking.
Why was this hard for you guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
there's too many.
Yes and no. Yeah, because there's so many, and we'll probably do that thing that we always do every single week on Topic Girls Beginner's Guide, where we go, oh, well, there's loads of obvious ones, and no one picks them because everyone thinks it's everyone else.
Yeah.
Which is like, take a drink of that. It's
a great way to do a beginner's guide.
So we did, Zombie Girls Beginner's Guide, the ZGBG, and this is where we pick, it's usually a subgenre or something within horror that we want to tap into, stuff that we maybe might not dedicate a whole show to, or just highlighting some maybe underseen movies, and whether it's a genre, subgenre or something like that, either as a way in if you're new to horror, or as a just a way to showcase some of our favorites that might not get talked about. And because it's Women in Horror Month, we decided to do horror actresses. So I don't know how you guys tackled this. I kind of came at it in two different ways, either just my favorite horror actresses, or actresses that I try and make an effort to see what they're in, because they usually elevate whatever they're in. And just standout horror performances, like a one-off performance that I thought was just really, really great and worth chatting about. Mm-hmm. So I haven't decided, I've got a longer list that I normally do, but I'll let you guys go first and I'll see what's left at the end. Did you guys tackle it in the same sort of way or different way, or how did you pick
I mean, I was like, okay, well, I was trying to think of like, okay, what are people who are horror actresses? Like, because I mean, no actor is only doing one genre, but like, what are ones where we like associate them with that?
Okay.
Kind of how I went. And it was hard because I don't watch a lot of old movies, and like, Scream Queens are not really a thing in the way that they once were, you know?
Yeah.
Where like, actors are attached to studios and they make Hammer films, or you know what I mean. So I was like, okay, well, like, who are modern, like our current new people, plus maybe like my favorite.
Okay,
so that's how I approach my list.
Okay, sure. Sarah, what about you? How did you approach this?
I don't know. I'm just kind of pulling it out.
Okay, sure. Do you hear the typing in the background? That's how she did it.
Okay. I won't pick on you first then, Sarah.
I'll go ahead and go first, because I got two right off the top of my head.
Okay, go for it.
Go for it.
Okay. Dee Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, good one.
You know, stand-up performance is definitely The Howling. But Cujo was pretty good too. Dee Wallace was like the mom of the 80s, especially the early 80s.
Yeah.
You know?
Sarah, did you see Lords of Salem? Because she's
that's
that...
exactly what I was thinking.
No, I still haven't seen Lords of Salem.
You gotta see it, Sarah.
So
she's
great in that. I think you'd really like it. Well, hopefully you would.
I think you would really like it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then my other one is, I will watch literally anything with her in it, is Catherine Isabel.
Oh yeah, she's on my list too.
Good one.
Yeah, and if you want to see a really great Catherine Isabel performance, there's a TV show, a police procedural called Motive, and she's in one of the episodes as a waitress. And you know, I enjoy watching pretty much anything that she's in on screen. And then can I pick a third?
Sure.
Angela Bettis.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I really like her. She's not, I think she's really pretty, but not in a typical way, not in like the same way that like Catherine Isabel is. Mm-hmm. But she's got great facial expressions. I think that she plays a lot of really interesting characters. Mm-hmm. Even though the show sucks, her episode of Criminal Minds is really good. That's definitely one you should seek out. She plays a woman with sight issues.
Right.
Did you ever see that her episode of Masters of Horror? Sick Girl
Ooh, with Misty Mundane.
Yes, I love that one so much. It's so gross, but it's also so sweet.
I know,
it really is. She's the nerdy scientist.
Yep. Yeah.
Cool. Good pick, Sarah.
Okay.
Ariel, how did you tackle this, and what were your picks?
I was just trying to think of, you know, kind of favorites of mine personally. Mm-hmm. And people that maybe have been in a few horror movies and have done a really good job. I don't know. I like Sarah, I didn't go like really deep in the way I was thinking about it.
Okay.
But anyways, Catherine Isabel was definitely on my list, but I was thinking Barbara Steele, because I love Black Sunday, and Pit and the Pendulum is like the very first horror movie I ever saw. So cool. I have a soft spot for it, and she's really great in both of those. And then I also picked Neve Campbell because the Scream movies, the first couple came out, I think, when I was like in junior high. It was sort of like at this perfect time where nobody I knew was watching horror, but like I understood all the references, which made me feel really cool.
She plays the Rock's wife in that skyscraper movie that's coming out.
Oh really?
Yeah,
because she hasn't been in anything for a while, or nothing that I can think of off the top of my head, but I mean she was in so much for a long time, and she really is a good actress, and she's always so likable and enjoyable to watch.
I love her performance in the Reefer Madness musical.
If you haven't seen that,
you really need to check that out.
Okay. Good to know. And then, you know, I have a couple that I guess are really obvious, but I also picked Kathy Bates because performances are always amazing. Misery.
I was going to pick her, but I figured she'd be number one on Rachel's list.
Yeah, I felt dumb.
That's okay. We got her out there now.
Yes.
So Misery, she's amazing. Mm-hmm. Her roles in American Horror Story, I've found incredibly enjoyable. She's just an all around, like, great, solid actress.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nice one. Thanks, Ariel.
And she can rock a beard.
Yeah. That's true. She can.
Yes, she can. Kathy Bates.
I'm so far behind on American Horror, so I haven't caught up yet. So I've just finished season two. I'm lagging behind. Really, I haven't seen any Kathy Bates in it yet.
You're getting into the best season next.
Yeah. I really want to get in the right mindset for Coven, because I really want to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Rachel, what are your picks?
Well, I went pretty modern. Okay, I have one, and I feel guilty because I'm sure this is on your list, but you picked me first. And that would be, of course, Sigourney Weaver.
Damn it.
I had to pick her. I mean, she's Ripley. She is one, right?
Yeah, man.
I mean, Alien, the first half of the Alien series, Copycat, and like, even though people hate this movie, I actually thought Red Lights was really, she was excellent in it. I don't know, I didn't hate that movie. I thought she was good in it. And then my other people are both, like I said, I was trying to think of like modern people, because I knew that Ariel was going to bring the Black and White Thunder. I figured Sarah would have the 80s and 90s on lock. So my picks are Jane Levy, who was the main girl in Evil Dead and Don't Breathe.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And she's got a new zombie movie coming out. I think she's great. Like, her big, huge eyes make her perfect for horror. Mm-hmm. But she has sort of an every girl kind of vibe to her that, like, even though she looks a little bit like an exotic, beautiful beetle, she also kind of seems like a normal person. Mm-hmm. So, like, you can kind of get into her in the way that you would, like, an 80s scream queen. Queen. Mm-hmm. And then my other person was Micah Monroe from It Follows and The Guest. Mm-hmm. She just has one of those faces I want to look at. And so I am immediately invested in everything that she does because I want to look at her face. I even watched that terrible Independence Day sequel to look at her face some more. It wasn't worth it, but it was close. So those are my things. Oh, and then I have some like alternates as well that we can do at the end.
But okay, yeah, we'll do those.
In case I'm stepping on your toes, I don't want any more.
No worries. Yeah, leave me some, you guys. Okay, cool. Thanks, guys. So mine are, so I'll go with the three that I'll watch stuff that they're in because they tend to elevate what they're in and above the level it might normally be. For example, my first pick is Melissa George.
Oh yes!
Triangle
is so underrated.
It's so good.
And 30 Days of Night was way better than it was supposed to be. The Amityville Horror remake, way better than it was supposed to be because of her.
I like that one.
Which one?
A lot of people hate on it, but I really like that one.
It's better than it should have been. I mean, because it's got her and it's got Chloe Moretz. Like, it's got credentials, you know, and horror remakes are good again now, but 10 years ago, whatever, when that came out, they weren't in a good place. But that movie is better than it.
Is that with Ryan Reynolds?
Yes.
Okay, I need to see that. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's pretty good, and she's really good in it. Another one is Vera Farmiga. Farmiga?
Yes. Yes.
And I feel like she's a great actress, and I really, really liked Orphan. I thought she did a great performance in that. I didn't really like the Bates Motel show. I fell off that, but I thought she was fantastic as
Mrs. Bates. She's the most tragic character on television, period, ever. Like when you get into like the third season and there you like see a glimmer of happiness for Norma and you just know it's gonna go wrong. Break your heart.
Oh, it's such a shame because like I fell off that show beginning of season two. I just felt like I didn't like where it was going, and it's such a shame because I really, really liked watching her and I wish it was a bit more about her, but yeah, that's a shame. Is it worth sticking with?
He ends up like locked up for a while, so it's like just the her show. You know what I mean? Okay. Like, he's, like, dealing with his therapist and, like, trying to figure out how to get out. And she's, like, secretly, like, moved on with her life. And you're just, like, you can almost see, like, a happy future for her.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, we all know how it goes.
Oh, okay, maybe I'll fast forward to that then because I like watching her. And, I mean, I've been on record as saying I did not like The Conjuring movie. I still haven't seen the second one, but I thought her and Lily Taylor were the best things in The Conjuring by a long stretch.
Yeah.
Really, really great.
True of the second one as well.
Oh, yeah? Okay. I still haven't seen it. And my third pick, I'm surprised she hasn't been mentioned yet, Jamie Lee Curtis.
That's my alternate. I figured somebody would.
Yeah. I mean, I just think she always brings a certain kind of like class and grace, and she's a great example of someone who's just aging really beautifully and gracefully. And, you know, I think she seems like a really, really cool lady. And I'm really excited about the new Halloween movie coming out.
Yeah.
Oh, me too. I want to see it so badly.
So those are mine. My honorable mentions were, so I picked a couple of like just standalone, like that's a really great performance. And I picked Essie Davis from The Babadook, but I've been harping on about the Babadook for like 3 years now, so I didn't feel like I needed to harp on about it anymore. But her sense of just exhaustion and I'm at the end of my rope with this on top of it, like the horror aside, just having that kid screaming and kicking the back of your chair, I just thought she had that just spot on. And Mia Farrow in Rosemary's Baby. Same, just the way that she's kind of, I don't know who to listen to, and everyone's like, oh, when I had a baby I did this, oh, don't listen to your doctor, you should do this, and don't read any books, you should definitely do this instead, and oh, okay, oh, I guess I'll do that then. I just, and that just sense of I've got no fucking idea what's going on, and that final scene in that room when she sees the baby for the first time and you just see her eyes, it's like a masterclass. Yeah. masterful stuff. What were some of your alternates then, guys?
I had Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah.
Of course. I also had Jennifer Carpenter.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So did I.
And then for the new school, Anna Taylor-Joy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Great.
Yeah. I also had Linda Blair on there.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Did you have any extra, Sarah?
No, I was, once we started moving on, I'm like, oh man, I can't believe I forgot Jamie Lee.
Right.
Sorry, Jamie. We're sorry.
We love you.
Yeah, if you're listening, Jamie Lee.
Yeah.
I think she is.
Of course.
She better be.
Well, if she comes back to my work, I've already let my boss know that, you know, she might end up filing a restraining order against me.
Oh, wait. She's been at your work before?
Yeah, she was actually the guest speaker at the Fresno Women's Conference a couple years ago.
That is so cool.
I'm like, really, yeah, cool. She's gonna see me coming and go, oh, show up in my Michael Myers shirt with my 25 year release, my 30th release, my 20th release.
Amazing.
All right, shall we wrap it up?
Yeah. Mm.
Well, in that case, let's move on to our Netflix streaming pick of the, I always say week, that's hilarious, the episode. So, this episode's Netflix streaming pick, I had to pick something, obviously, it's Women in Horror Month, mm-hmm. I had to pick something directed by a woman, right?
Yes.
So, fortunately, something new popped up on Netflix this week that is co-directed by a woman named Caroline, oh god, I'm gonna butcher this, it's Canadian, it's like Canadian, it's a Canadian movie, so I'm assuming this person's like French Canadian. Uh-huh. So bear with me on this one. And also, making it worse is my stupid, one second, my autocorrect changed the spelling. So,
oh no.
So it says Le Recivis. Like, it's, I can't even. Just give me one second. So this is
in the same episode we've had Anna Lily
This is a problematic episode. Okay.
Yeah, cut all of that.
Never! All right, so this movie is directed by, co-directed by a woman named Caroline Lebrèche? I don't know, something like that. And Steve Leonard, but we're not worried about him. Let's just focus on her. It's a movie called Radius. Have either any of you ladies seen this?
No.
Okay. It's kind of like a sci-fi-y sort of. It's like, you know, we talked about how there's some gray area of certain genres. This is definitely one of those ones that saddles sci-fi and horror. And it is about a man who wakes from, like, he's been in some sort of car accident and he has amnesia and he doesn't understand what's going on. And all these people just start dying. Every animals, people, whoever come within a certain distance of him just drop dead. Mm. And so he doesn't know what happened, why it's happening. At first he thinks that there's like some sort of outbreak going on. And eventually he figures out that he's sort of the cause of it, except for that a woman shows up and she's able to get inside his radius, and she also has amnesia. So the two of them have to team up and figure out what exactly happened to them. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty great. They're like on the run because everywhere they go, people freaking die. And so like they go to his farm and there's dead bodies at his farm, and they go there's this path of destruction and they don't understand what's going on with him. They think he's a terrorist or something, but they're like slowly getting their memories back and figuring out what's going on. And it has kind of a cool resolution that I didn't see coming until maybe 30 seconds before it's revealed, that it was pretty fun. And I definitely recommend it. It's on Netflix. Put it in your eyeballs. You'll have a good time, especially if you like sort of sci-fi horror. It feels very much, it's not a super high budget thing. It feels like sort of top-notch sci-fi TV that's coming out of Canada. So like if you like a Continuum or a Passengers type of thing, you will like this. I don't want to say it's like a sci-fi movie because it's not cheesy at all. It just feels, it really feels like a Passengers or Continuum level kind of budget, but good, quite good. So check out Radius, support your lady filmmakers and their co-directors. But she gets top billing, I will say that. And I think she actually wrote it as well. So double the awesomeness.
Cool. Sounds good.
All right, ladies, that's it. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about before we wrap this sucker up?
No, I don't think so.
We're good.
All right. Well, all you out in the audience, thank you so much for listening. We would love to hear from you. We say this every week. You never write us, but I'm just going to keep saying it until somebody does. you can email or write us at Rachel. Drink your coffee. You can email us at Rachel@zombiegirls.com. You can find us on the Facebooks. You can contact us there. We've all been pretty good this month about being present on the Facebook.
Yeah, so every day.
Who knows who you're going to get to see? But you should join us. Leave messages on the Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. You can call or text us at 1-678-694-7759. And if you are enjoying the show, you know, it would be really super extra mega dope if you would go on to iTunes and leave us a review. It's one of the best ways to support the show. It's kind of the only way because we're not asking for any money. So leave us a review there and we'll get world famous and people know we exist. And then we'll be like, you'll be able to be like, I knew you back when you was nobody. You could be a ZG hipster.
I like that.
As you listen to our Blue Apron promos. Right.
Right. Oh my God. Can you imagine? Because you know, like you have to do the flavor text or whatever, you know, when you're doing those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would ours would be such a fucking hot mess. I'd be like, speaking of corpse fucking, Sarah, have you tried this new Blue Apron? All right. Jody, take us out.
Hey, thanks everyone for listening to the Women in Horror special of Zombie Girls podcast, and join us next time where we'll be doing something fun that is maybe directed by men.
Let's be real, it's going to be directed by dudes. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye. Bye.